from Social Services SG,
I'm Jing Miao, co-hosting this episode with Isaac Neo. JOM is Singapore's new weekly digital magazine covering the arts, culture, politics, business, technology, and more in the country. With co-founders Sudhir, Shamin, and Wei, we asked them about how they got started, their plans to cover civic issues that are somewhat controversial or contested in society, and navigating long-term journalistic integrity and financial sustainability. Sudhir, Wei, Shamin, welcome to the podcast. So JOM at JOM.media is a new weekly digital magazine covering the arts, culture, politics, business, technology, and more in Singapore. So maybe just two quick questions to start, right? So first, each of you, tell us a little bit about what you did before starting JOM and how the three of you met and decided to start the magazine. I thought we should start with Sudhir first.
Yeah, so I've been a freelance journalist for the past 9-10 years before starting JOM. And I think for many years, there was this kind of sense that, you know, I should try and like build something in terms of an independent media outlet that could perhaps fill a gap in Singapore. So people have been like kachowing me and bugging me for a while to try to do something like that. I think over the last 2-3 years, some of my thoughts around it crystallized a bit more. And I kind of put out a call for collaborators in early 2021. And I think, you know, I was like very focused on getting at least two co-founders, maybe one more, but at least two co-founders who I felt very comfortable with embarking on this crazy unknown journey. And yeah, I was very happy that I think it was within 4 to 5 months, I had very productive conversations with both Charmaine and Wei, both of whom I had known before, but, you know, kind of superficially, I guess. We've gotten to know each other better since then. Yeah, and things just sort of slowly fell into place from there.
Yeah, and maybe Wei, tell us about how, you know, you've known Sudhir beforehand as well, but how did you decide to embark on this journey together?
I'm not sure if I exactly decided to embark on this journey. I met Sudhir because in my past job as an editor, I commissioned him to write a commentary just as Heng Swee-keat had sort of announced that he would no longer be the next prime minister, kind of. So that was just in 2021. And then sort of a few months later, he had announced, Sudhir had sort of communicated on his social media that he was thinking of starting an independent magazine, and it sounded really interesting to me. So I just wrote in and said I would be interested in being a collaborator or writer of some sort.
And Shamin, tell us a bit about yourself and the work you've done before starting and meeting for the magazine.
So I guess how I would introduce myself is that I have an art practice and I work across photography, performance, moving image. And I also set up a commercial studio called Almost June, which provides photography, videography, and research services. And for me, I picked up the camera when I was in university as part of a documentary practice program. And after I graduated, I began to enter this field and try and make projects in this context. But I was always independent. And I think JOM came at the right time because I wanted to mediate as a platform for visual creatives. And I also recognized that this was a rare opportunity to build a media organization on terms that I could agree, that I could agree on. So that's kind of how things came together. It was a lot about the right time and the right place.
It's interesting because, you know, what was interesting as a follow-up question to all three of you is, beyond that standard introduction I said just now, how would you describe JOM? And what stood out when, you know, Shamin and Wei, you were saying, Wei, you stressed independent. Shamin, you ended with this notion of and doing something on your own terms, right? So I'm interested in, you know, how would you describe JOM beyond that standard boilerplate kind of description of the magazine?
I think for me, the idea of starting something like JOM was really about creating something that perhaps all of us had sort of aspired to in our different careers. For me anyway, specifically, I've always been in journalism and a bit in communications, and just the idea that we could create a magazine where it wasn't driven by quantity, but more about quality. allowing also for us to decide exactly what we wanted to present and not being driven by the news cycle. That was exciting for me. The other thing was the fact that a lot of my career was I was being always sort of apprehended or schooled about writing too much. And this idea that people don't read or that have an issue with anything that takes them more than 8 seconds to understand would be too much and too overwhelming. So that was exciting for me. And also finally to be able to be part of the agenda setting as well, like what was going to go out rather than like being driven by other editors or management.
I think it's similar to what many people think when they first see Joan, that it is independent, that is not governed by certain agendas. And it's also not centered on content creation as the driving force. And I think these are important principles that then make up a rare opportunity in Singapore. Yeah, in the region as well. And in Singapore, definitely. So it's something that I was thinking about for a long time. Also because when I did my undergraduate degree, it was in the US, and the sense of documentary practice or journalism is very different. Obviously, coming back to the region, you work in a different way and you find ways to do what you want or find ways to do what you love. And I'm glad that Joan came at a right time when I felt like I could step up in a way to mediate for other people who are also wanting to contribute to this.
I think we have touched on this, Charmaine, in a way too, but we espouse a lot of values of what's commonly called slow journalism today. So, you know, being right over being first, not engaging in journalism, but actually putting out a lot of original content, taking a stand on issues and being clear about it. You know, I think if you look at like the long arc of media, right, a lot of old publications like The Economist and The New Yorker would probably adhere to a lot of these philosophies. They may not call it slow journalism, but they adhere to a lot of these philosophies. But I think over the past 15 odd years across the world, but certainly in Singapore, there are a lot of new media outfits that are driven by short-term metrics, driven by engagement, driven by the desire to attract more and more eyeballs. And so I think in a way, you can also look at Joan as a kind of antidote to this in the Singapore context.
Mm-hmm. What's interesting and what I'm hearing from all three of you is this really neat convergence between your personal priorities and kind of like experience in this field, together with what I completely agree with, which is the need for quote unquote slow journalism in Singapore and the region, right? And I must say that for me and Isaac, who are on this podcast, really excited there's another Singapore-based publication, right? That doesn't really exist right now, in my opinion. And before we were recording and thinking about the different questions, we were particularly interested in how you intend to fill this space in slow journalism, right? So how Joan plans to write about and cover different social political issues. And I'm also interested in the long-term kind of sustainability of the enterprise. So maybe I'll hand it over to Isaac, and then Isaac will get us started in terms of understanding how do we fill this space in terms of slow journalism.
Yep. So I want to really like dig into the publication itself. So as a subscriber, I get the full suite of Joan's offerings. So you guys have a free newsletter that is sent out to anyone who subscribes to it. But for subscribers, you guys offer an update, a weekly update on what's been happening in Singapore that's interspersed with your own opinions on what's been happening, as well as a weekly deep dive essay. So I just wanted to ask firstly, what were the considerations behind these offerings?
If I could just go back to a little bit to the previous question, the idea of what Joan is trying to create, aside from a magazine and a place for interesting content or essays, it's the idea of like deepening the idea of discussion and communityship, the fact that as a publication, we can support and encourage a community where people, not just of like minds, but people who are interested in argument and exploring issues in a deeper way. We wanted to create that kind of space for that to allow that for that to happen. So just the idea of discourse or dissension or dissonance, discomfort, disagreement. Mm-hmm. I mean, it all sounds very disputatious, but I find it sort of like exciting that we can agree to disagree, perhaps, or even disagree to disagree, but that we can allow for that to happen. And a lot of the internet is extremely divisive and binary. So if Jom could provide that outlet for people to come together and build on certain ideas and opinions, that would be wonderful. So to go back to your current question, the idea of it being a weekly and the fact that we have Singapore This Week and then our longer form essays was for Singapore This Week to kind of encapsulate what's just kind of happened over the week in Singapore. You may or may not be following the news cycle, but we just want to put our spin on things and what we think is essential to know about what's going on in Singapore. So at the end of the week, you might, I don't know, meet friends or colleagues for drink, but you would already have a sense of what's going on and you would have a different take on what the mainstream media are sort of feeding you. And then in terms of the commentaries and the essays, that's really for you to take time to consume, to allow it to percolate and to enable you to really think more deeply and take your time around. And this is going back to slow journalism, rather than being inundated with 20 or 30 different pieces, we only give you one or two. That's all you need to read, and we'll be grateful for your time in this and make it worth your time.
If I guess this is interesting because you tied it with the notion of creating a space, and correct me if I'm paraphrasing this incorrectly, for argument and different opinions, right? So I'm wondering, with Singapore This Week and the commentaries that you offer, where do you see the space for folks to interact or engage or kind of talk to one another in that sense? Not directly, but in the sense of engaging with your materials and trying to create that discourse that you mentioned at the beginning of your previous response.
I think it can happen both ways. It can happen offline, so we wouldn't be privy to that. But then online, I think we eventually, and Sudhir could explain more, I'm thinking about allowing for comments, for instance, which would be quite a sort of exciting ground to nurture that kind of discussion.
Yeah, I think we're kind of slowly inching our way towards online engagement and conversation and comments. So at the moment, you know, we're starting off slowly. So it's just happening mostly on our social media channels a little bit. But I think eventually on the site itself, what we want to do, at least as a first step, is to have subscriber comments. So, you know, subscribers are allowed to comment, and hopefully then we can slowly build up that. I mean, we've looked at things like the New York Times as a possible model, you know, how they do their comment section. And we want to eventually get there. Yeah. But at the moment, you're right. At the moment, there's no space on the website itself for like organic conversations to happen, but I think we want to eventually get there.
But I must say that it's not necessarily a fair question from me, because I mean, to do that space is not easy, right? Because I mean, we've seen from the social media comments and platforms of other even more established kind of newspapers as well, that's not necessarily constructive at all. You argue most of the time, and it's hard to, I think, in the beginning, foster or create an environment or community that allows for that kind of discourse, which I think will happen over time and not right from the get-go, in my opinion. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we'll have to see how it goes. You know, I mean, content moderation has been a bit of a pain for a lot of outlets, but I think at Jom, if we start slowly and do it well, there'll be enough of a self-selection bias when it comes to people commenting and keeping things in check. But yeah, I mean, It's difficult, lah. It's difficult. Could be a sort of a Pandora's box that we open once it happens. But yeah, you know, I think we do want to get there. We do want to get there. I think the possibility of like volatile commentary or like inflammatory commentary that we've seen over the past couple of decades, I don't think that should scare us off, right? I think we should try to create that space where people can engage in like good critical dialogue.
Yep. So yeah, going back to what Wei said, I think you mentioned slow journalism quite a few times. And to me, it seems like Jom is interested, you know, in the kind of reader who it's not necessarily follows the news every day, but wants people to, you know, tell them what's important in the news, and more importantly, wants people to go deeper into the issues, break it down for them. And on your website, you guys state that Jome's target reader is, and I quote, somebody who enjoys good prose, is eager to engage with contrarian views and thinking, and amid our contemporary information overload, wants a publication that can curate and tell them what's important and why. So I'm just curious to know, like, how do you intend to draw in such readers? And as a side question, you know, some people might ask, is there not a risk that you're looking for such a very narrowly or very specifically defined sort of reader? Is there a risk that you might be preaching to the choir, writing for readers who already share similar opinions to you and your team?
It's a good question. I guess because we're online, we would be kind of throwing things out into the ether and hoping things bounce back. But I think for the start, it would be good to rely on friends and family, so word of mouth. That's what we found at the beginning since we've launched. Virality is also important, and just the ease of sharing stories. So I think a lot of it has to do with also interface, how easy we allow people to spread whatever we've published. And then when you talk about preaching to the choir, I think there's nothing wrong with that. I think it's important that you imagine the choir is something that can evolve and can learn new tricks or songs. I don't know, sorry, it's a really bad metaphor, but or analogy rather. But essentially, it's really about allowing people to feel like that coming together with other like-minded people, but not creating a bubble. I think it's worse if we just end up creating a bubble and people are just very stuck in their opinions, and which we don't want. So that's important too. And then in terms of most of our essays would be behind a paywall. This is not so much about being exclusive, but also reminding our readers and audience that quality journalism requires money, and it's important to support that. And we want our readers to feel in some way, not connected, but invested also in the kind of stories they're reading, because we're going to be paying our contributors well. We're going to ensure that we're spending the right amount of time to produce stories that are in depth and accurate and authentic. And that requires resources and time. But in terms of also remaining inclusive, we want to also be open to the fact that some people might want to be part of the audience but might not be able to afford it. So we've made it quite clear on the website that, you know, if you would like to subscribe but for whatever reason can't, do write in and we'll see what we can do to help.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense, you know, what you mentioned about the choir. You know, you can teach a choir new songs, you can provoke them with new ways of thinking with your articles and so on. I want to also dive into the publication style. So on your website states that Jome intends to emulate the New Yorker. What does that mean for folks who may not be familiar with the New Yorker?
So there are several principles I can think of. And the first is that it's an approach that necessitates slowing down rather than quickening, much like the New Yorker does not publish daily news, but weekly issues. So the importance of slowing down is related to an intentional processing. The question is, how can Jome provide a space for people to process our emotions and thoughts together? And the second principle is that there's the presence of journalistic rigor, which the New Yorker has established over almost 100 years. And what this means is that we wish to uphold high standards of journalistic research, critique, and integrity. It doesn't mean that we won't make mistakes, but it does mean that we are trying to minimize the emotional second-guessing that often takes place when we encounter content day in and day out. And I think that's something that we can all benefit from. The third principle is that we want to contribute to the vibrancy of intellectual and emotional life in Singapore. And this broadening of viewpoints is what Wei was referring to earlier.
Yep. So I'm also interested to know how Jome intends to cover civic issues in Singapore, which can be rather controversial because, for example, like Section 377A, which now, I guess, since it's being repealed, but the aftermath will still be controversial, or things like the campaign to abolish the death penalty and so on. Because for, you know, like magazines like The New Yorker, they have very clearly defined slant and they have issues which they speak out on. Whereas for Joan, what I'm hearing is that the guiding philosophy is about slow journalism that is not, that is free from political interference, not influenced by corporate interests. That's why you have a paywall, subscription model, and so on. And in Singapore, you know, we're used to media outlets wanting to both sides issues. You know, like they need to, they want to act like they're fair, politically neutral, and so on. So I'm interested in how Joam intends to cover controversial civic issues in Singapore.
I think we're independent but opinionated, so we certainly will be taking strong positions on issues that we feel strongly about. And, you know, one of our values is solidarity. And, you know, we express solidarity with all kinds of disadvantaged, marginalized, excluded groups. And I think that will inform a lot of our positions on issues. So if I could quickly answer on something like 377A, you know, I think we're quite clear that Joam will never allow a pro-377A position commentary on our website, on our publication. And some people might consider it a kosher viewpoint in Singapore, but there might be lots of people who actually are standing behind this viewpoint of, you know, being pro-377A. But, you know, we're quite clear that that position is, in our view, a bigoted position because it essentially argues for the criminalization of gay men. And, you know, that runs completely contrary to our values. It's not something we will be engaging in. If I could, I'll just answer about death penalty as well. But death penalty as well, you know, we won't offer a platform to people who have a, you know, strong pro-death penalty perspective on the issue. If I could just talk a bit about both-sidism and balance, right? I mean, you know, I think the contemporary roots of it probably are like 1970s, 1980s America, when, you know, Black, brown, queer people were for the first time finding a voice in the media. And, you know, balance was often used as a tool of the powerful, right? To defend racist and homophobic views, to counter these emerging voices that were coming out from excluded communities, Black, brown, queer, and others. So balance, you know, the notion of balance is often used in this way, and both-sidism is similar. And if you look at much more current times, I think, you know, the thing a lot of people talk about in journalism is the start of the Trump presidency, right, where balance and both-sidism was used as justification to publish some of Trump's, you know, racist perspectives or some of Trump's comments that were actually outright falsehoods, right? They were all published under the guise of, you know, we must offer balance and we need to both side the issue. So I think it's important for publications today who are independent and opinionated like us to take a strong stand on the issue. For us, you know, balance doesn't mean that we have to necessarily showcase all views out there. You know, balance to us means that we internally, you know, give a fair hearing to perspectives, but then, you know, we have to decide on positions and issues that we think are important, that satisfy our own internal values, but also, you know, pushes society along in a productive way. So yeah, I think that's kind of our view on it.
And I should also say that I personally share those views. My interest is also in how does the team, the three of you, I imagine, who are the core team, come to make these decisions, right? So for instance, you know, 377A, death penalty, I can imagine a slew of different issues as well that comes up. So what's the process like in terms of thinking, hey, this is a position we'll take, right? And this is something that, so for instance, you mentioned, we'll never publish something that's pro-377A. So what's the internal kind of discussion process like in coming to such decisions and positions?
I'll go very quickly, then I'll let, you know, Charmaine and we come in. But I think we, you know, for big issues like we've spoken about, 377A and death penalty, we have had internal chats about them. We had them very early on, actually, which I'm grateful we had the time for in the first 3 or 4 months when we were together. Now, for smaller issues, I think it's, you know, we have very sort of open lines of communication. So on smaller issues, and I can think of a couple of, you know, somewhat contentious issues recently. So one was a national service piece that I wrote.
Mm-hmm.
Another one was our sort of combined JOM editorial on 377A.
Yep.
So that then we're getting down to, you know, niceties around actual phrasing and structure of argument and things like that, which we have a very open sort of collaborative editing process, which I think sometimes might be a bit stressful when you've got 7 or 8 people. You know, they're in addition to the three of us, there are you know, a bunch of other people as well who are connected to JOM who contribute to that process. But I think it's from what I've seen so far, it's an extremely comprehensive and robust process. And it seems like everybody feels quite invested in it.
Yeah, we'd love to hear from Wei and Shamim, but also think about, I'm also interested in what was the biggest disagreement or kind of, I'll just say conflict, but disagreement the team has had, the 7 or 8 of you on a recent issue along the lines of what Sudhir has just mentioned or shared.
I'll just go really quickly. I can't really remember what the biggest disagreement is off the top of my head. I really can't, but maybe Sudhir and Wei, you remember. Anyway, but what I wanted to share is that a lot of the times it's just because we're at different points of understanding the issue and haven't fully come to terms. And it's just hasn't been our time to fully wrap our heads around certain issues yet, as opposed to we have already established strong opinions and they are all opposing. And I think that's pretty natural. That happens with everybody and in the team as well. And so, yeah, there will be issues like 377A or the death penalty that have had more discourse, and therefore we've had the opportunity to shape our views more. But for something that's a little bit more nascent, some of these views are shaped by personal experience, and therefore we have a lot stronger feelings than maybe someone who hasn't experienced that or encountered that in life. That's more of the how we kind of are working towards some kind of principle or principle of solidarity, if you will.
I really like that, because what you're reminding me as well, which is the three of you have been alluding to, is it's kind of like slowing down the process. Because I realized that one of the problems is that we want to come to a decision or position very quickly. But if we want to go through that process of contention, nuance, trying to figure out what exactly that position would be, I am not surprised that it would take some amount of time before any form of position is formed or before you coalesce around any position in that sense. Yeah. Sorry, Wei, go ahead. I cut you off in that sense.
Specifically, what else would you, that maybe...
I'm interested in something there was a disagreement over, or what was the biggest disagreement y'all have had as an editorial team or as a team of 7 to 8 that you mentioned.
Okay, I don't think I don't think we've had disagreements as such. It's more a case of the fact that like Shami was saying, our different experiences have not somehow found a common point yet, and because we don't feel the need to rush things, I really appreciate the fact that all of us are willing to give each other space and time to come to whatever we need to come to understand and accept the other's point of view. That could also mean, like, in terms of communication, that might not always work out, but I think what's important is the empathy that I found in the team, that you have really smart people that I'm working with who are not just rational, but also emotionally connected with the issues at hand that we talk about. So that's been really important.
Yeah, no, I can highlight one thing where I think there's, you know, we have different positions on. So it's something like national service. I think actually, you know, if you read my piece, I'm sort of arguing for changing national service quite drastically. So, you know, no more forced military service, which in Singapore is quite a sort of liberal progressive position. I actually realized that within the team, talking to some of them, I'm actually within the team one of the more hawkish ones. There are actually people in the team who would actually go a bit further than me. Like, you know, some even like, you know, completely maybe getting rid of the military altogether, sort of a Costa Rica type model. I think the other thing that we need to contend with internally is at the end of the day, there are pieces that have a particular name on them. And so it's also giving the person whose name is on them leeway. So as long as we can somewhat gather around a particular position, and I think it's true for a lot of the essays that we put out, you know, I don't think we all necessarily have to agree with everything that's said in every essay at the end of the day, right? I mean, it's got the author's name on it. If it's not something that you know, they're not saying something any of us violently objects to, then there also has to be a bit of intellectual leeway for that particular person's view. So,
you know, along those lines, I find a question about the content or the substantive content of Jome, right? So the team has written about this previously, but for the benefit of listeners who are hearing about Jome for the first time, how do you compare or position Jome vis-a-vis Rice Media, New Narrative, or maybe other publications like Mothership.sg? I imagine the starting point will be what Charmaine shared, which is slowing down, journalistic rigor, intellectual kind of contributions as well. But how would you position Jome, you know, vis-a-vis or compare Jome to these other outfits that are, you know, kind of more mainstream these days in Singapore?
Yeah, one of our newsletters aimed to address this. We said briefly that Rice is reliant on content for advertising purposes. New Narrative is functioning more like a political think tank almost. It's a project for democracy. Mothership is more closely aligned to establishment media. And Dome is independent and also quite focused on being a literary and journalistic magazine. So the style, the principles that guide journalism and writing are really important for this project. And I think maybe now it just sounds like words. People don't really know what it means if you've never heard of Jome and are not familiar with us. But I think that the difference will come through in time to come when each of these publications cover similar topics, but in our various approaches. And then we can maybe surface all these different ways in which we are unique.
This interesting litmus test. I didn't think about it that way, but I think I actually agree that the litmus test would be seeing how the different outlets, including Jome, would cover some of the upcoming issues also. Yeah. I mean, what I'm also interested in, since we're winding down the discussion, we talked a lot of the content. You brought us through Jome in terms of the content, in terms of how the team works. I'm interested in this final piece about long-term sustainability, right? One of the phrases that stood out to me, it has been alluded to multiple times today, is pure journalistic outfit, right? Because I personally was part of two publications, Breakfast Network, The Middle Ground. They were all both very strongly focused on reporting and journalism. And both from, you know, personal experience and observations around the world, the notion of pure journalistic outfit doesn't always gel or sit well with financial viability, unless you are a large outfit like the New York Times with thousands of reporters and benefit from economies of scale, right? So this is a really long-winded preamble, a way to ask this question, right? So how do you convince listeners and Singaporeans to pay $10 a month for $120 a year over the next few years for Jome's content? And whether you think that strategy is going to be, you know, sustainable and viable 5-10 years down the road?
Well, I don't think it's going to be easy. I don't think any of us thinks it's going to be easy. You know, I think financial viability is our main risk in terms of Jome. Everything else about the organization, I think we're all feeling quite confident about. Whether or not we can convince Singaporeans, many of whom are addicted to free content, to actually pay for journalism is a different thing. We have about 2 years, so we have a sort of a 2-year runway to get to the point of, you know, being cash flow positive. And I mean, it's going to be a long journey, but I think there are a couple of things that have changed over the past few years that have given us confidence. You know, I think one thing is related to other outfits and what Charmaine was talking about, our differences with other independent media outfits in Singapore. And you know, I think a lot of people feel that there is a need and space for something like Jome, right? And that's just anecdotal evidence that I've heard. The other thing that I think might work in our favor, I hope, is that my suspicion is over the past few years, Singaporeans have become a bit more used to subscription products, whether that is because of Netflix or Disney or the New York Times or Patreon. More and more people I speak to are getting used to actually, you know, quote unquote, supporting a media product that they like. So I think, you know, Janiel, if comparing to when Breakfast Network first came around or the Middle Ground, you know, I think there's also been a slight market shift since then. And fingers crossed that that will be enough to translate into numbers that can sustain Job. But yeah, I don't think any of us thinks it's easy. I mean, you know, there are different things that we can try to do. For instance, if there's an election next year, that might potentially help us. Like it helps a lot of media outfits if we do good presidential election coverage, or even if there's a general election, like some people think there might be. So there are, if you look at Singaporean media outlets over the past 15 years, TOC, for example, got a big bump from the 2011 election. So there, you know, there are sort of little things like that. I kind of consider them cheats in a way. Like I wouldn't necessarily want Joam to like achieve liftoff based on like exclusive presidential election coverage. But you know, I think there are things like that that we can try to use to our advantage.
Yeah, I would say the same for the Middle Ground in 2015 as well, for the general elections at the point in time as well, 100%, right? I mean, a quick kind of follow-up will be, you know, without giving too much away, you know, you mentioned the runway for two, three years. What are some of the subscription targets? Maybe, you know, how many part-time, full-time, freelance staff do you expect to house within Joam in the next year or so?
Yeah, our subscription target is 3,500 paying subscribers. So that's what we need to get to. We are not even 10% of the way there. I think we're under 300 at the moment, paying subscribers. So yeah, it's a long way to go. I'm hoping we get to the point where there's a critical mass and, you know, people want to support independent journalism through Joam and they start sharing our articles and, you know, it's all a cycle. People are hesitant to share, you know, paid content sometimes, because then you're quote unquote saboing your friend who has to, that they can't just click on it. They have to actually, they'll click on it and hit a paywall, right? But I think we need to get to that stage where people feel comfortable sharing our content, even though it's paid. People start talking about Joam. And yeah, so I think 3,005 is our target. How many positions? I think we're in the process of trying to add a few more like adjunct part-time position. So we have a history editor, Faris Jeraimi, who's actually based in New York right now. That's a part-time position. We're hoping to add a food editor. We're hoping to add maybe a sports editor. And the point of adding these other positions is partly just to show focus in these particular areas, show leadership and focus in these areas. But also, I think at some level, they just, you know, improve the diversity and strength of the team. Not just in their particular areas, but, you know, advice and contributions they can give in other parts of the business as well. So I think part-time sort of adjunct editor positions, we will be adding a few. Full-time, I mean, it's hard for me to say, but let's say, you know, let's say we get to that 3,005, right? I can see us adding, if we get to 3,005, I can see us adding one or two more full-time positions easily. And we do want to, you know, we're at the moment quite heavily focused on long form and photography. But I think we do want to eventually do a lot more like podcasts, just like this one that we're doing with you right now, internal Joam podcast, and videos as well. So video content as well, which all costs money. So we need to get revenue in before we can make investments in those areas. But yeah, a lot of it is just dependent on the subscribers.
And I guess the final question, which is tied completely to what you said, which is in a somewhat cliched fashion, where would Joam be in the next 5 to 10 years, right? So what can for you, you've given us a sense of what types of content we can expect, but I guess in a more philosophical manner or more kind of meta level, what should folks expect and what would Joam be in the next kind of 5 to 10 years in addition to what you share about the content?
I think a simple answer for me is that we would want to be a strong voice in the media. So it's something that we are building towards. But in the meantime, we are keeping our head down and kind of working on really building a solid foundation. Whether or not it's editorial, or it's the process of running a business, or it's about how to build a team with the right values, I think this is what we really need to focus on. In a more tangible way, we are hoping to do a print magazine, annual print magazine, and we'll have a little launch party for old faces, but also new faces, hopefully. Hopefully you'll be back in Singapore then. But I think that this is kind of where we're at the moment. Wei and Sudhir, feel free to cast your visions as well.
Actually, because this is also, you know, we've talked about Joan, but personally as well, maybe if I framed it differently, right? So what would you expect individually or personally from Joan in the next 5 to 10 years? Either both Wei and Sudhir would love to hear from both of you.
I guess I'm going first because someone's having a drink. For me, I completely agree with what Charmaine's just said, slow and steady. But, you know, I would love just for people to just even know about Joan and to reference and quote Joan. I think just this idea that we're part of the daily conversation or daily thinking process of people would be quite exciting, whether people agree or disagree. So, yeah, just to kind of infiltrate the sort of the public imagination, that would be very, very, like, that would be like, even like a little bit of that would make me very happy.
So yeah, everything, yeah, totally agree. I think as Charmaine said, a lot of our focus now is not so much on like looking at short-term numbers and like subscriber numbers, but like really focusing on ensuring we have common values in the team so that we can work harmoniously. Ensuring that our sort of internal processes are up to scratch so that, you know, we put out content in a very deliberate, methodical fashion, which we have been doing. In terms of like 10 years, 5, 10 years, I'll just say a couple of different things. One is that, you know, we do have plans for regional expansion if we manage to grow. So I think we would all love if there was a Joan in KL, Penang, Jakarta. I think it will be quite locally focused to some extent. You know, unlike the New Yorker, I don't think we can have one like homogenous publication for the whole region. You know, I think most likely it'll be like something like 20% common content and maybe 80% more localized content. But the philosophies and the approach and everything, the team that we try to build in each of these cities will be similar in sensibilities and approach, right? To everything we've spoken about on this podcast. So, and I think that ties into one of our, you know, bigger values internally, which we may not have advertised yet, but it's, you know, to sort of improve the sense of connectedness and belonging among Southeast Asians. I think that's something that's quite important to all of us in the team. And, you know, important not just for Singapore to, you know, remember its place in the region and where we are in the world, but also just for other parts of the region as well. The other thing I would say is that, and this might happen outside of any regional expansion, but the other thing I would say is that we want to become a platform that pays contributors well. And what I mean by that is there aren't that many opportunities for independent writers, independent filmmakers, independent photographers, you know, to make a decent living in Singapore through journalism, right? And we all really hope that Joan can be that platform that people can be doing meaningful work while earning like a decent living wage for living in a very, very, very expensive city. So, you know, I think if we can achieve that would be really amazing.
I mean, there is a liminal space between what folks want and what folks need. And some would say it's ambitious to kind of cater to that second group, the latter group, which is what folks need. But I think that's exactly what Singapore kind of needs, which is why we shared, Isaac and I are really excited for this, right? I think Joan brings to the table, as the three of you have shared, strong voice in the media, community building, not just of your subscribers and readers, but paid contributors who really appreciate that notion as well, and that notion of connectedness in Singapore and beyond. And I think that's something that I think will change over time. I'm not sure the rate of change, right? I think it's going to come. I'm seeing things like Substack and different forms of newsletter subscriptions. And I think there is a demand for it. And I hope, you know, that's something that will pick up over time also. Yeah. And, you know, folks who are interested in subscribing and in reading, finding out more, can visit jom.media. That's jom.media. And I really appreciate the three of you joining us today, Sudhir, Wei, Charmaine, sharing your thoughts. And really, really looking forward to what's coming down the pipeline. And I hope to at some point also work on some of the pieces or even podcast episodes together down the road too.